The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Live from a bunker in the heart of the Ozarks, a podcast that is the one who knocks. It's SIFPOP. Welcome to SIFPOP Weekly, streaming live most Fridays, or available to download later in your podcast feed, unless, of course, you're a patron.
Patrons get perks!
Patrons get those perks.
Woo!
I'm your host, Aaron Dicer, and he has never been late for a New Year's party. It's Andrew Ormsby, ladies and gentlemen.
I thought that was a reference to me being late for the show. Ahoy!
Each week, we'll chat about movies, TV, and whatever else from the pop culture universe is on our minds. And please welcome our guest this week. He's here to make friends with us and our dads, too, but his heart is broken. It's Ian Whittington.
His heart is broken because I don't strictly think that your intro was from one of the movies. I think you stole that from a different show. I don't like it.
Oh, no. What did I steal it from?
You said I am the one who knocks. You did Bad thing.
No,
you
but didn't. It, but it applies.
It's a double. It's a double entendre. It works.
You're a double entendre. Hello.
You're out of order.
We love having Ian on the show, if for no other reason than right off the bat, he just questions everything.
Well, don't give me reason to. You don't seem to understand who you're talking to here.
This is what happens, Aaron, when you let your drunk friends just pop on the show whenever they want.
It's amazing you caught me just as I was leaving the pub.
Often the initial podcast thing, whoever the announcer is when they do it, so I consult on it a little bit, but when the announcer does that initial podcast thing, it's it can be anything that is tangentially related to the title or whatever. Like oftentimes it's even just a pun, like it's a pun on the title name, that kind of thing. So, but if you're feeling bad about it, I can talk to them and have them, you know, make sure it's a direct quote from, you know, the
Please. Okay, it would be appreciated.
I will do that. Yeah. We're excited to have you with us. Those of you who are joining live on the Friday broadcast, thanks for hanging out with us today. Those of you who are joining on the podcast feed at a later date, thank you for listening as well. We're excited to talk about a couple movies today. We've got, we're doing a little bit of ketchup, not so much mustard, just a little ketchup. Yeah. We're talking about plain, which is neither mustard nor ketchup when something is plain. And we're going to chat about that, even though it came out a few weeks ago. And then Knock at the Cabin just came out. We're going to chat about that as well. Going to do some Gerard Butler for our best ever challenge. And then, of course, we'll do some buried treasure as well. And if you're wondering our thoughts on the DC announcements, that is what we did for our members only pre-show. So all our SIFPOP members will have a conversation between the three of us on some of the thoughts of what DC has announced and whether or not we are excited or rolling our eyes or some combination thereof. Mm. I'm ready to get into some movie talk. So let's do it. Let's chat a little bit about Knock at the Cabin.
My name's Leonard. Well, it's nice to meet you.
Why are you here?
I suppose I'm here to make friends with you. And your dad's too. But my heart is broken.
Why is it broken?
Because of what I have to do today.
There is a woman carrying something that looks like a pick. With a chain and a mallet head.
While vacationing at a remote cabin, a young girl and her parents are taken hostage by four armed strangers who demand that the family make an unthinkable choice to avert the apocalypse. With limited access to the outside world, the family must decide what they believe before all is lost. M. Night Shyamalan coming back with his latest Dave Bautista, Jonathan Groff, Rupert Grint, Ben Aldridge, all in this, as well as some others. There's a lot to talk about, but let's start here. What did you guys think? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay? Ian.
I didn't like it. I am at the very low end of didn't like it as well. Yeah.
Withholding the hate it button, but really lingering right there on the bottom of didn't like it.
Can't quite get there, but I am paddling.
Okay. Mr. Ormsby.
I am going to go with liked it, and I feel that I'm missing something that can fully unlock this movie to loved it, but I do... But I don't think you think are. I'm prefacing that by saying that I do think this movie makes a couple mistakes and missed opportunities, you know, to push it to loved it. But I could be wrong. I could actually love it now, and I just don't know it.
Sure, and that's one of the things I love about movies is that that kind of thing can change. Tar's a lot like that. I think I've talked about it. Kind of unlocked for me a few weeks after I had watched the movie.
Which I need you to send that article to me because I can't find it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I can look that one up. You know, with M. Night, I have no idea how to sift through my own biases. Like, I have no idea because I have strong biases both ways with M. Night. Like, this is one of those things where this director has given me euphoria in the movie theater several times, right? But this director has also given me the worst movie experience I've ever had.
Right? That is wild, isn't it? Yeah.
It's really, really strange. Now, I'm developing, as time goes on, a theory as to how that has happened. But for now, just talking about this movie, I am going to say currently, much like Andrew... Currently, I am on the high side of liked it. I really liked this movie. And as I linger, and I think I started at just liked it, and as I've lingered with it, have either convinced myself of things that are not there, or have it has continued to resonate with me in a powerful way. So I'm excited to talk about it. Ian, I will tell you, I would have been extremely surprised if you were even at It's Just Okay. Like, I walked out of this movie going, man, there's some things about this movie that Ian is going to despise. Man,
you have no idea how good that makes my heart feel. Yeah. I know it shouldn't matter. Like, I feel what I feel. But that makes me feel justified. And I am really happy that you guys like it. And there was a point in the movie where I was like, I'm in liked it. Cool. It lasted about 3.5 minutes. And I was like, oh, no, I really don't like this. That's good. I'm glad I know now.
I'm glad we have settled that.
And you know what I'm going to say about this movie. I'm pretty confident.
I have a feeling that I know some of the places you will go. And I'm excited to go there. I will also say it should be no surprise. It is not a twist that we will be doing a spoiler episode on an M. Night movie. That is, that should not be a surprise. So there will be some things we will hold for that. But I guess I can kick us off. Yeah, it sounds like I was the one who enjoyed it the most. And I guess I will start with the centerpiece, which is Dave Bautista.
Yeah.
I think that's a good place to start, and probably one the three of us, I think, can agree on. It's just, it's really interesting for me to watch his career. And how he's almost being, and I don't mean this in a pejorative way to either of them, but he's kind of choosing the anti-rock path in his movie stardom, right? And to see him purposefully choose projects that stretch his ability, that put him in positions to play different kinds of characters, to purposely pick directors who have very clear artistic visions, you know, whether it be... Dune with Denis Villeneuve, or, you know, M. Night Shyamalan, or, you know, Ryan Johnson.
Yeah.
You know, whoever he's choosing, I'm really digging his choices. And I think he's pulling it off. This is the first movie I've seen him in where I have come away going, He may not just be able to pull it off. He may actually be a really good actor. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Because you think in terms of a while now.
Well, and you're not alone. And a lot of people have said that for a while. I'm saying I'm just getting to that place because I think there's a lot of times we judge athletes on a different acting scale than we judge actors. So, you know, when an athlete becomes an actor, they get a little bit of a boost just by going, you're a professional wrestler. You shouldn't be able to act.
Yeah.
But that's their job.
Yeah, right?
I guess of all the sports, professional this wrestling is the one that does have a nice little in on that. So I think Dave Bautista is really good. I also think the performances around him are great, too. I think Rupert Grint gives a really great performance, especially in a very specific scene. Kind of blew my mind. I'm falling in love with Ben Aldridge. I think he is so good in this movie. And I just recently saw him in the movie Spoiler Alert.
What was the movie, though?
The movie is called Spoiler Alert. The Hero Dies is the name of the movie. And spoiler alert, I won't tell you who the hero is.
But, that's the one with Jim Parsons, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, I wanted to see that.
Yes, he is phenomenal in that, and he is phenomenal here, and it's a 1-2 punch, and I've gone, paying attention to you, you're doing incredible work. So I just start us off with the acting and just say I thought it was really, really good all around. Andrew, what's something you want to bring to the forefront?
Yeah, I haven't disagreed with anything you've said so far. I think that Dave Bautista is great. This is an interesting take for Shyamalan, because I think that, and I could be wrong, I think this is his, like, most intimate, tiny, indie film he's done. Like, if you look at, like, even his earlier movies like Unbreakable or even Signs, that, you know, they're kind of confined. But this one just seems, because maybe the cast is so small and it's a one location kind of a movie, that it forces you to really pay attention to the story and, you know, not like great visuals or action sequences or anything like that. No, he's trying to tell a good story here. And I think for the most part, he is. I do have some issues that I think could have made it better, because that's me. I know how to make good movies, apparently. You know?
Because that's what we do.
That's what we do.
We tell multi-million-dollar making directors that...
Exactly. We criticize, and then we go out, and then we make the movie better.
We're productive.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right.
No, but I totally agree. The performances all around. Actually, I think that Nikki Bird and Abby Quinn were some of my favorite performances in the movie.
Yeah. Like I said, strangely enough, Jonathan Groff was the only one I was like, that's fine. You know, like it felt a little on the nose to me at points, which, by the way, for an M. Night movie, that's generally the performances are, you know,
they all feel off.
Right. Because the writing is that way. Like, that's how he writes. He writes with that kind of stilted, almost dialogue style. But everybody sold it really well. So, yeah, I agree. Ian, did you have any good things to say? Was there
No, I do, but you've already said them all.
I wondered.
I would love to switch out all of the actors with, let's say, E, F, G list, like D movie type things, and see if you still like this film, because that's the only thing that made that kept me going, is that Bautista is, he's just really, this is my favorite Bautista performance by a long, long way. I think he's fine in Dune, but he's not given a lot to do. He is what I expected in Glass Onion, but this is what I want to see. Like, I'm waiting for that point in, like, The Rock's career where he does convincing drama, because it's kind of like actiony, and then in the later years it's like, I'm going to do more serious think pieces now. I love that Bautista is going in and picking a character like this right now. I love that so much.
Do you remember his character in Blade Runner 2049.
That's what I was about to bring up.
Yeah, he's not in it too much, though.
No, but it reminded me of this a little bit. Yeah.
Because
way more nuanced than it had any right to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. The thing that Bautista is not afraid to do that I think The Rock is choose a role where he's vulnerable. Mm. Like, you know, where he is a human. He's not larger than life. He's, yes, he's a big guy. He's, you know, scared straight youth pastor here. But at the same time, you know, there's a timidness to his character.
Yeah. There's an apologeticness to what he's being forced to do.
Yeah. And I think I couldn't have said it better than forced to do, because it feels very much like nobody is at fault here.
I wholeheartedly disagree, but
no, honestly,
but I see what you mean. I do.
I think from a narrative standpoint, and we can get into, especially Aaron, I'm going to have some questions about some of the metaphorical stuff in this movie, but I think that, I think for the most part, I appreciate the fact that yes, David Bautista is given a good performance, but he's also, pushing the boundaries of his roles that he does.
Well, I guess I'll take us then into the next thing that I thought was pretty amazing, and this is not a surprise with M. Night. I think the filmmaking in this movie is astonishing. Like, I think some of the tricks he uses for tension in holding an audience is, I'll just say there's a scene in the car, and I was just, it was some of the most interesting tension building I've seen in a movie in a long time. I don't know that I've ever seen something exactly like that. And he's so good at figuring out which camera angles to use, what distance to be. He uses a lot of close-ups in this movie. And they're used at exactly the right times. And I really enjoyed his use of the camera and the way that he shot this and edited it and put it together. So I thought the filmmaking in this was really, really good too.
It was kind of like a Jonathan Demme movie. You know, you look at Silence of the Lambs where everything is like a really personal close-up shot like that.
Mm-hmm.
It adds not only a sense of tension, but also it's really great with character pieces like this because you really get to focus in on the emotions.
Yeah,
that's really, really interesting because this was probably the least I've been gripped by an M. Night movie.
Interesting.
Because
Even like The Happening?
Okay. Fair.
After
Absolutely
Earth.
Fair.
After
I
Earth.
I can't. All right, fine. I'm being hyperbolic.
Avatar.
But it's I did not feel very gripped. And I kind of wondered if that was deliberate because this is more of a character piece. This is more of a character study. So I wondered if he was deliberately letting the actors do the work and letting the characters do the work without anything too fancy going on behind the camera. But
there's so many great scenes of tension. Like, I think the shower curtain scene. I think, like I mentioned, the car scene. I think there's some really... It just didn't work for you, is what you're saying.
Yeah,
those scenes didn't work for you.
It's just stuff that I've... And I really don't like saying this. Stuff that I've seen before. Because it's great. That's the whole point of movies. But do it well. For me, it wasn't anything new. Like, I knew what was happening in both of those scenes. I just wanted to hurry up and get there. I didn't feel tense. I will put a huge caveat on this, that about 20 minutes into the show, there was a real life human the world interaction thing where somebody, a group of six people, had been talking the entire time
their
phones. Someone from the opposite side of the cinema gets up, comes up, walks into their row, stands in front of them and says, "What are you doing?" And just goes through the lists of why they're terrible people and why what they're doing is disrespectful, why everything is terrible, and eventually they be quiet. And he was just like, "No, you're not going to try. You are going to be quiet." And then just leaves and goes back to his seat. So to be fair to the movie, I tried to put that out of my head, but it did break the... That was the tensest thing that I experienced in the entire evening.
Real life tension. Nothing can make movie tension feel less impactful than real life tension. That's interesting. That's wild. Bravo for that person, I guess. I don't know. I don't know, man.
We all thanked him because we were all thinking the same thing. But it's like, am I in a room where somebody is going to do something about it?
Yeah.
Because I'm probably not the person in that room that's going to do something about it. I'm going to go on a podcast and complain about it later.
Right. Yes. Yeah, exactly. Interesting. The other piece of the tension that worked for me, aside from those scenes that I've mentioned and some others that, I didn't, I think the psychological tension works for me as well here. There is a real through line of what you believe, what you're willing to believe, and what you know, what constitutes proof. You know, what is the things you think you know, the things you found put to the foundation of your life. Are you willing to where is the line where you're willing to let those go? And I found that tension to be also really, really interesting and having something to say as well.
I'm going to keep counterpointing you. I'm having just the opposite feelings entirely. Like, that element of the psychology, that part of the movie, didn't work for me at all. Because I feel like nobody had a chance. And that psychology is interesting for me if we don't know where it's going. And I just know where kind it was going. Maybe it's just chance, but from the get-go, I knew where this was going. And maybe that's what's colored the movie for me.
Too.
I had every single beat, and I was like, I hope it subverts me, and I hope it's not going to do this, but I felt sorry for the people in there, because there was no... I don't want to get too spoilery, but there's no way to apply logic to this and get out of it. Like, they were doomed from the beginning. This was only going to play out one way. And that just didn't feel entertaining to me.
I could not disagree more. Like, I think part of the question is what, you know, how do you actually use logic? And, like, how logic interacts with the things that you're experiencing.
But they're not given enough information. I can't wait to get into spoiler chat about it.
But that's what I'm saying. So that there is tension as to, like, okay, I don't have enough information. So I'm going to fill in this or fill in that or, you know, whatever the case may be. Anyways, I found that compelling, let's just say. Even if not tense, I found that thought experiment really compelling. And there's a secondary thought experiment, which is more thematic or whatever, that that I'm still pondering on what was intended, what wasn't, those kind of things. And it has to do with the idea of power, exerting power, issues of faith, of God, of what it means to... here's what I'll say, that I think I can say non-spoiler, you know, before we get into spoiler talk, where I'll be a little more explicit. There is a conscious effort to focus us in on the collection of grasshoppers. And there is a metaphor going on with this that is clearly stated right at the beginning and then expounded upon metaphorically throughout the movie about what it means to be God, to be in control. And so that was fascinating to me because, and it will be in spoilers where I have to expand on this, that was fascinating to me because I'm still thinking about what was intended. Like, what was M. Night's intent? Now, listen, M. Night, this is not the first movie M. Night has made about faith. Signs is a movie about faith. Like, that 100%. Literally is a movie about what it means to believe something, right?
Yeah.
And there are a lot of echoes of Signs in this movie. So it's not like he's foreign to the idea of exploring issues of belief and faith in those kind of things.
Yeah, the Mel Gibson cameo was a little weird, but
it was a little weird. It was weird that at one point Mel Gibson popped up running around the cabin trying to pretend like he could swear. That was very strange. Yeah. I didn't understand that scene at all.
But that's no stranger than Morbius turning up.
Yeah.
That is true. That was a little wild as well. So anyways, I'll expand a little bit more on that in the spoilers, but I will just say that I love it when a movie will make me think, and this movie has continued to have me pondering what was the intent and my own thoughts on some things that I will be clearer about in the spoiler section. Other thoughts? Andrew, your turn.
Well, kind of the grasshopper thing was really what I was kind of struggling with, like to make sure that I understood the metaphors at play here. And judging from what you said, I was kind of on the right track. I still am curious if there's a deeper meaning to the grasshoppers than what I am trying to unlock, because that is my biggest thing right now is like, okay, the grasshoppers, they have to mean something more than what I'm, you know, putting into this metaphor for them. Yeah. Like, do they represent the four of them, or are they a representation of, like you said, God, and like how we play God with the animals around us and stuff like that? And
just because I have something I believe I took from it doesn't mean it was A, intended, or B, is there, right? I always say,
you're the final word.
I always say this until Jordan Poole says, yes, it was actually about, using cameras in police brutality, then I'll know, oh, hey, I was on the right track. But until M. Night comes out and says, yeah, this was intended, which is not M. Night's MO, by the way. He usually lets his art, you know, speak for what it is. I won't know for sure, but I'm excited to have the conversation in the spoilers. Yeah.
But the biggest problem I have with this movie, and I think it has to deal with the audience's ability to doubt. And what I mean by that is when you have a director like M. Night Shyamalan, you have to do what I think is a better job of subverting the audience's ability to doubt what they're seeing. But you have a director who is not afraid to push those boundaries with past projects to where at the end of the movie, whether you're like able to believe what's going on definitely sways more in one way as opposed to the other.
And oh, no, I think that this is a clear ending. There's nothing abstract about this.
This isn't
this
ambiguous.
Ending.
No.
But I think that they could have done something with that. Like, sure. Where I think this movie fails and a movie like 10 Cloverfield Lane works is because there is a built-in doubt of the narrative being provided to you. Where I don't think that... Mm. I don't know if it's Shyamalan's... he's like, that's not the movie I want to make, you know? Or
it's what I was hoping for, honestly. I was hoping for the script to be flipped. Not because I wanted a twist, just because that's a more satisfying story for me. That's what I'm more interested in, and that's, I'll have to expound on that in spoilers, but there is a movie in here that I like.
Well, what's interesting to me is that, if I'm understanding what you're saying, is that you didn't feel like that was even a possibility from the very beginning, whereas I felt like what you're talking about was a possibility all the way up until the very end.
Yeah, no, I didn't.
Oh, interesting.
I was hoping it would, but I thought there's no way it's going to happen.
You know what? Yeah. The movie would have been better if there wasn't a TV in the cabin. I'll say that.
I disagree. I totally disagree. But
no,
really?
I don't think the movie is anything without the... Like, I think...
You'd have to definitely change the narration of the movie around, because the television and the TV proof is definitely a factor in this.
I mean,
Go ahead, sorry.
It's one of the funniest panda cartoons I've ever seen. Like, I just... Like, how does the movie exist without the pandas? I don't understand. I don't understand what you're saying.
I don't know why they had to have Morbius playing in the background for the entire movie.
Ian, talk a little bit. Go ahead. Lay into the stuff you hate, and I'll see if it's the stuff I thought you would hate.
Oh, it's a big old list. Disagree. Oh, I can't say I disagree. I dislike the stereotype of how the skeptic is portrayed. I am really, really tired of movies portraying the skeptic in this way.
Isn't that subverted here, though?
No.
I don't think so. No, okay, not, no, no, right. Not for me.
I won't expand. I won't expand on why I think that, but...
No, please do. No, expand if you can.
Until spoilers.
But yep.
Yeah, continue.
The person of faith is presented much like how people of faith are presented. That also annoyed me.
I would agree with that, by the way. But continue. Yeah.
Good. Glad you agree with me. For me, the themes and the placeholders were really paint by numbers. So I'm glad that we have the nihilist. I'm glad that we have the person of faith. But every line that was spoken, every point of view that was brought across, I was like, I've seen this in Star Trek. I will just go and watch my favorite Star Trek episode.
That's not fair.
That deals
Star Trek's
with this.
Covered everything. That's like The Simpsons. It's like,
no,
I've
no,
seen
no,
it
but
in
I'm
The
not,
Simpsons.
No, no, no. But I'm saying it does it better. I'm saying you can do these themes. Like, there is no end to the stories that you can tell that deal with these themes, but do it for me, it wasn't done in a satisfactory way. There wasn't a new spin on it. There wasn't anything extra.
You've seen the story before.
Sorry?
You've seen this story before? Not...
Yeah, and I'm happy to see the same story again. That's movies. I just... It's got to do something different. Like, add something new to this story. And I don't think there was anything new added to this. This is a story. It's probably one of the oldest written stories that we have available to us.
It sure is, buddy. Uh-huh. It sure is.
It's kind of like the trolley paradox almost, you know?
I was thinking of an older story than that, but
It's Abraham and Isaac.
I know you're talking about. It's the story. It's the oldest.
It's Mount Moriah, baby. Mm-hmm. Like, it goes way back.
And I think my biggest, the themes just being on the surface and not delivered entertainingly or uniquely to me was what I said about the protagonist just not having a chance. Like, I think every decision is made before the movie even starts, because I don't know as a human being how you act any differently as everything is presented to you. And the skeptic is just painted as the one that's actually speaking all of the sense. If this happens in the real world, if this happens to me, you, and Andrew in a cabin, we all, I would hope, react as the skeptic does. But yet they're painted as the one that's...
I'll tell you this right now, Ian. If the three of us are locked in a cabin, the world's not looking good, you know?
Yes, fair. Absolutely fair.
Well, I do think that the skeptics, you know, iteration, they're burn the whole world, I don't care, kind of cliche, mm-hmm. you know, until the very end sort of thing, is played off, you know, played upon, you know, and it's been done, you know, the same way. But I still think that there's a lot more to that character than just the skepticness of them.
I do want to add one caveat, that this is also a person that has been persecuted. And I completely agree with why they feel the way they do. I'm not saying that it's unrealistic. That persecuted part, I loved it. Like, that is that the representation in this film for that, one of my favorite things. That was powerful. But the skeptic part of that person's character is already there. That is already inside them before the traumatic event. So that's the bit that, God, just do something different with it.
I think I put in my Letterboxd review that that the overall message of this movie is very distasteful, and that I think it's on purpose, because I think it's trying to make us think about something. But when you really process what it at least appears to me is the message of this movie, I don't like it. I think it's gross. It's that is part of one of the things I'm still chewing on. One of the things I'm trying to figure out, okay, am I missing something? Or is it supposed to make us think about times where we've been distasteful like this? You know what I mean? Like, where we mm-hmm. have, you know, done something like this. I'm talking around spoilers, and we won't have to do that, mm-hmm. you know, forever. It is the primary reason I thought you wouldn't like this movie. And it has to do with the idea of, you know, that the idea of logic and reason are, in many ways portrayed in this movie as religion, which is a really interesting thing to see, but it is also something that's very distasteful, because they should be the absence of religious thinking, right? It should be the absence of those ideas. And what this movie seems to be saying in some ways is that putting your belief system into what you believe is reason and logic can be a form of religion. So, which I think is a really interesting conversation to have. It's a really interesting topic to go into, but especially considering what we've been through in the last decade is very distasteful to me, because it speaks to something about fanaticism that is is, I think, a weakness of humanity, not a strength. So
there is a missed opportunity here where I can't even talk about that without spoilers, but there is a missed opportunity where I was hoping this was going to go, that where it doesn't.
We'll get there in spoilers.
There's no way I can
carry this conversation on in the SIF spoil. That'll be up there in your feed after this. If we remember to record it. Any other...
Did you forget?
What was that? Just recently. We ended up recording it late, and it got out a couple days after the podcast. We were like, all these things. We're going to talk about them in spoilers.
That's the worst type of edging. That's horrible. It's not there!
Any other thoughts? Any other things that you guys wanted to talk about?
No post-credits scene.
That is true.
Out barely before the credits started rolling. I couldn't have told you that.
I'm going to do some general M. Night thoughts. I think M. Night is finding a really nice niche. And what I mean by this is he's self-financing in a lot of ways. He's making the movies he wants to make. He's telling the stories he wants to tell. And he's kind of back in this, he kind of went through a stage where he expanded his idea of what he was as a director, tried big budget stuff, and it clearly didn't work for me, those kind of things. But I think he's at his best when he just gives in to everything that he is. And I know everything that he is annoying to some people. Like I mentioned, the stilted dialogue. I mentioned, the on-the-nose-ness sometimes. Old was very much this way. Old had a very... on-the-nose metaphor where everything everybody said played into the idea of how time passes. You know what I mean? Like, it was right there. Yeah. But I kind of love him for it. Like, it's kind of like it's his thing. And I really am coming to a place where give me one of these kind of stories every year from M. Night, and I'll be a happy boy. Like, I may not like all of them, but I like that he's kind of finding this niche and rhythm of, this is what I want my career to be, heading this, from here out. So I'm excited for that. And my overall M. Night thoughts are that I think he has talent and even genius, I would say, within a limited idea of, his comfort zone. And I'm liking that he's finding kind of just the freedom to be who he is. I will also tell you, I've watched some interviews with him recently, recently started following his Twitter. I just like the dude too. Like, he seems to be so very in tune with the audience movie dynamic. Recently saw him talking about the response to The Village and kind of how he perceived what happened with the audience's response to knowing, I knew what was going to happen, so I don't like the movie, kind of thing that people did with The Village. And it was really fascinating. You're not alone. I think a majority of...
No, I'm not going to hide. I'm going to own up to it.
Yeah. So. No. I think a majority of the dislike for that movie had a lot to do with, M. Night, gives us twists, and I knew where this was going. I knew what the twist was. Mm-hmm. And he talks about the audience movie relationship and how expectations can impact those things. Anyways, I found it a really interesting conversation. So I think he's really intelligent. I think he knows what he wants to do now. And for me, that's a lot of fun. And will I like them all? Probably not. Did I like this one? Yeah, I think I did. So that's where I will finish off with Knock at the Cabin. All right, let's move into our second movie, guys.
Do it.
Let's talk about Plane.
Captain Torrance, Flight Commander. How can I help you?
Fugitive extradition.
Oh, is he dangerous? What did he do?
Homicide 15 years ago.
I don't want to scare the rest of the passengers.
I'm afraid you're stuck with us, Captain.
Get him on board. Let's have a good flight. We're cutting right through the top of the storm. Listen, keep everybody in their seats. No exceptions, all right?
I need everyone to have their seatbelts securely fastened.
After a heroic job of successfully landing his storm-damaged aircraft in a war zone, a fearless pilot finds himself between the agendas of multiple militias planning to take the plane and its passengers hostage. Gerard Butler as Captain Brody Torrance is our central hero. Speaking of finding a niche, Gerard Butler has really kind of found his Liam Neeson of it all. And is having a good time.
I think that is
trying to be a little more heartfelt, a little more genuine, not just action. So it's interesting to kind of see what he's doing. I felt that in Greenland. I feel it here as well. Certainly some other people joining in as well. But this is a Gerard Butler movie. What did you guys think? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay? Andrew.
I'm going to go with high side of okay. You could probably convince me to like this movie by the end of this conversation.
I will.
Fair enough. Ian.
Oh, high side of liked it. Nearly loved it. Nearly. Yeah. Just nearly.
I think we're all right. I think we're all right there. I'm on the high side of liked it as well. Well, I guess Andrew's on the high side of it was okay. I'm also on the high side of liked it. Maybe not quite as close to loved it as Ian, because you seem really excited to talk about this. So we will let you go ahead. What are some of the things you loved about playing?
This is just perfect for me. This is the perfect 90-minute Die Hard-like action movie. Like, this is exactly what I look for in a grab a pizza popcorn movie. I'm not saying that every movie needs to be like this by any means. I'm going to come off as the person that like hates the thinky movies and likes the action now. But this movie just did it for me. Like, it is so efficient with its storytelling, with what the characters are doing. It knows the story it's going to tell. It's entertaining. This movie has tension. I actually did feel tension in this film. Gerard Butler is doing what Gerard Butler does, but with a slightly more, with like 20% more Scottish in him.
Yeah.
I like the people. This has one of the best plane crash sequences in a movie I've ever seen, mainly because of the build up and some work it does beforehand. I like this movie. I like this movie so much. It is exactly what I needed. I was one of three people in the cinema, which probably colored my experience as well. It was great. I just had such a good time.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. First of all, the movie was 110 minutes, not 90 minutes. It was 150. It was an hour and 50 was minutes. It? So, yeah.
My version wasn't.
The UK cut is a little bit shorter.
I'm not kidding. No, I could be wrong. I'm sure it was 90 minutes, but I could be
wrong.
That's
wild. That's wild.
Okay.
But the fact that it felt like 90, I think, is a good sign. Like, it feels, you know, you're never bored. You're never bored in this movie.
No, not at all.
The movie is very aware of its structure. It understands how to get you from point A to point B in a way that you care. It gets you right into what you're going to care about while at the same time giving you a little bit of background. The backstory is the worst part of this movie. I don't know that I ever really bought into the father-daughter stuff that it's trying to do. It almost felt fake to me, a little false to me, but it didn't matter because I bought into the survival aspect of it. And a good survival movie is a fun movie. Like, a good movie of people just trying to survive is, if done right,
smart people trying smart to survive people, as well. Yes. That's what I love about this.
Yeah, this movie from almost every character except one. There's one foil, but almost every character on the good or bad side is being smart about what they're doing. And I've called that competence porn before. This is a competence porn movie. They're just people making good decisions and trying to do good stuff. And that's fun to watch.
Yeah.
The elite military squad is like an elite military squad. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, it's, yeah. So it's the
A-Team C plot was a bit tacked on. I loved it though. I liked it, but if I had one line for this movie, it was like watching an episode of the A Team, but from the perspective of the people being helped by the A Team.
Yeah. I want to go off of that because this is my biggest pro for the movie, and it kind of deals with that elite squad, and it's the fact that this movie doesn't treat our main protagonist as a superhero. He is a pilot. And yes, he has that one fight scene where it's like that one shot, and it's not like the raid or anything like that. It's a guy trying to fight for his life that kind of knows how, but not really. But
I believe this is how Gerard Butler would get out of that fight.
Yeah, honestly, no. But what I love is like he has that scene, but then like when the elite squad, he's like, okay, I'm gonna go back to being the pilot now. You know, he doesn't have to constantly be, you know, like if this movie were made in the 80s, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger would have been the pilot. And even after the elite squad showed up, he would still be calling all the shots and leading the charge, you know. But no, not in this one. Like, as soon as they show up, he's like, okay, I'm gonna go back to trying to get everybody out of here. So you guys, you do you, and I'll do me.
Together.
Yeah.
They get along. This is a movie of people getting along. It's so nice.
Well, not everybody, like, but...
Not everyone. But there's a little bit of artificial conflict built in, but people are people. Some people talk through movies. But the pros come in, and he's just like, yes, sir.
Yeah.
Let's go. Yeah. I agree. It's so... It was really comforting in that respect. It stayed away from some of the cliches that are a bit annoying.
Yeah.
Yeah. I am realizing the more I think about this movie that I do have several negatives. And I don't
oh,
mean,
no.
Damn it, Aaron.
I don't mean to take us there too early. So instead of going there right away, I guess I will say Mike Coulter is also really good, who I think we know as Luke Cage, right? Wasn't he
Luke Cage.
My good buddy who stepped on me and apologized.
That's true. At the award, I forgot that. You got stepped on by Mike Coulter.
Going back to our seats, and he steps on me. Oh, sorry about that, buddy. And I'm like,
hi, Mike.
You're fine, Luke. Hi.
Yeah, you can step on me whenever you
want.
Step
on me again. Yeah.
I really like that character. There's plenty of cliche and trope to go around. Let's not pretend that there aren't a lot of cliches and tropes in this movie, but they are cliches and tropes for a reason. They kind of work. You kind of know what this character is right from the beginning, and that's okay because we want it to be that kind of character. The same with Tony Goldwyn as kind of running the FAA base or whatever. Mm-hmm.
The fixer. Yeah.
The fixer. So much fun. Again, competence porn. You know, just all these people like thinking things through and doing great stuff. Again, aside from the one person who was like,
we got to get you there on time, so don't fly over it.
We're trying to save some money.
Yeah.
Save a little bit of money.
Aside from that person, but everybody else. So I really did like that. I think all the surrounding characters that we get some time with are great. But this leads me to one of my negatives, which is I wish we knew the people in the plane a little bit better. I feel like this is one of those movies that could have benefited from having, and I don't mean backstories. I don't need backstories on all these people. I just mean
personalities,
stronger personalities, more than just, oh, this guy does TikTok. Oh, these, you know, people do this, you know.
This guy's like, English.
Yeah, right. So that they can be a little more involved.
Props in the movie instead of characters.
Correct. They are not involved in any kind of relational dynamic way, any kind of,
the
you know,
ones that get moved around
plot necessary way. That's okay. It doesn't ruin the movie. It doesn't make it terrible. I just think there's a better movie maybe where we kind of have. I know one of the things I remember from a lot of the action movies in the 80s and 90s is, as cheesy as they were, there were a lot of different characters that had, you know, their moments, right? Like, you know, there was always how their personality would come into it. They'd always have a line or a moment or whatever. And that's just not what this movie is doing.
Aaron, you should learn to care about people even if you know nothing about them, okay?
Yeah, I should. I really should work on that for sure. Before I keep going into more negatives, what other positives did you guys want to talk about? Oh, okay, cool. I'll go into some more negatives.
No, I'm not going to dominate.
I was waiting for Ian to go. But
No, I'm waiting for Andrew because I can go for ages.
Well, I think that the movie is paced very well. I think that especially that first 20, 25 minutes, not a lot is happening, but I think that, you know, the way that the movie is paced during that sequence makes it very, very intriguing because it seems genuine. You know, like everybody's talking in what I assume is authentic, you know, pilot lingo, you know, like all the navigation checking and stuff like that. It's like what Aaron called it, competence porn, can also lead to good tension building because even though you don't know what's going on, you can put your faith in somebody who does, and that kind of makes you a little bit vulnerable. So
when they're worried, I'm worried.
That's exactly what I'm trying to say. Yeah, when they're worried, I'm worried. So, yeah, the movie does a very good job with that. And I think that after that, it's continued to pace very well.
I think that opening 25 minutes is, and I'm probably putting it on a pedestal too much, is cleverer than 90% of people may realize it is. It is so deliberately normal. And it is exactly what it's like to get on a plane, go through that step by step. It makes you a passenger. It doesn't explain the techno jargon lingo. It's just competent pilots doing what they're doing for a good amount of time so that when stuff starts to go wrong, I'm like, oh, I don't want to. I have a flight in 45 days that I now don't want to have anymore. It was so.
Ian.
Like, I fly more now than I ever have before. I'm really fortunate. And that, it felt so realistic. Like, it hit really, really close. And it was just such a level of detail that I wasn't expecting from this movie. I was expecting everyone's on board. Oh no, we're crashing. Like, spoiler alert, the plane crashes. But the crash sequence is so good and so tense and so believable. And I didn't know where it was going. I didn't expect it to land, where it landed. It's one of my favorite bits of the movie.
Speaking of where it landed, without getting too spoilery, the end of this movie was the only time where my suspension of disbelief really struggled.
You have no idea what fun is. I was cheering. I Ian was like, get going it, for, let's go!
Ian going for the jugular. Mean, oh my God.
All I mean, no, I think it's done well. I think
agree with you, by the way. You
don't know what fun is.
I agree it's fun. I just think there's that part of my brain that's going, how this close? How, like...
yeah, like, I know. Even suddenly everything became, like, 1,000% less dangerous than I thought it was.
It's because those cartoons where somebody's, like, in the rain and they take one step to the left and it's sunny.
yeah. Oh, we're okay now.
What's going on? I don't... How is this working?
Oh, man. There is one line where Gerard Butler delivers the escape plan, and I just cackled. When he said what his idea was, I was like, that's amazing. And I'm like, this, the climax of this movie, I know what it's going to be. I am with my popcorn. I'm going to enjoy
just having fun. No, I totally get it.
Yeah.
At risk of getting a little too serious for a movie like this, the biggest piece of cognitive dissonance I came out with has to do with my pacifism. I've talked about it many, many times before, but this is definitely a movie that revels in the idea of how violence can solve a situation.
Doing what you have to do.
Not only do what you have to do, but the shots it's choosing, the way it's depicting some of the deaths, those kind of things, is very celebratory in this movie. It's like, it's very exciting and interesting. Now, I get for many people, that's a nice outlet. That's what action movies do. Like, they're bad guys. We want to see the bad guys blown up. But there's that cognitive dissonance part of me that's like, I don't want to see the bad guys blown up. I don't want to see anybody blown up. You know what I mean? So, so if you are anything like me, there will be a little of that cognitive dissonance towards the way this movie handles the dispensing of its plot trash.
Can I also say really quick, this is the first movie I can think of where somebody has a Barrett 50 cal and uses it exactly for what the Barrett 50 cal is made for.
That's what I'm talking about. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Really?
Yeah, that kind of stuff. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that thing can stop a car. Yeah, that's what it's made for.
I'm not talking about it stopping the car. I'm talking about what they use it for after stopping the car.
But I know you're talking about, like, through the car and stuff like that. Yeah. But I'm excited. Like, no, the thing is meant to, literally, it's built to stop cars. It's not a sniper rifle.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is a 50 cal. Just Google how big a 50 caliber bullet is.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Like fingers.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Any other thoughts? Any other stuff about playing?
Here's what was keeping me from saying I actually liked or loved the movie, is that this movie is just...
Go on.
Oh, Ian, Ian, get ready. The plot of this movie is a step above made-for-TV, like TNT made-for-action action drama. Like, it's pretty cut and dry. There's nothing special here. It's a meat and potatoes movies where it just does everything, but there's no like a dessert or anything like that. Or maybe you could say this movie is just all dessert and there's no meat and potatoes. Maybe that's a better way of saying it.
Yeah.
Because it's simple. It's a simple movie.
I mean, I wasn't kidding when I said the A-Team comparison. I felt like a really solid A-Team adventure was going. And I love the A-Team. I love that show. That's there's a reason I would tune in and watch that.
And I didn't like the Mike Coulter character. That was my other thing.
Oh, interesting. Okay. I like that character. Okay. Interesting.
I thought that there's a movie out there where it's from Mike Coulter's point of view, and it might even be a better movie, but I do like that it's different being from the flights.
From the white guy's
the pilot's point of view instead. Yeah. That's that's kind of, I think if Arnie is doing this film, then he is the prisoner. And it's that's what we focus on.
I didn't do it.
He has to win over the pilot.
I'm an innocent man.
In terms of like the stuff I didn't like, because I don't love it, there was some stuff that annoyed me, and it was the I couldn't help but compare it to Die Hard, and how Die Hard hits every single bit of this formula really well. You've got the protagonist doing his thing, you've got the villain, which is really, really enticing, and you've got the B plot, which is enticing as well. For me, this misses a villain that I am interested in, slash care about, slash isn't just, like you said, a prop. It's just I'm not really getting much from this villain or villains. And also the B plot, other than the fixer guy being really fun to watch, the rest of that B plot just washed over me. I was just like, cool, they're all fixing the problem. There's nothing here. There was a little bit of conflict where some government is refusing to do something, but that B plot was just, okay, here's how the ending happens. This is facilitating the people that need to be where they're getting to. But I wanted more the Martianing. I wanted more, how do we help them out of here? What do we do? And they didn't have that.
Yeah. I think that whole government unable to help is just the movie's excuse for putting an elite mercenary squad plane.
Yeah.
That's the only reason that's there.
Yeah.
But I want to see how many islands out there have male models as their warlords, you know. You know, with their perfect flowing
beautiful.
Yeah, his beautiful flowing hair, you know. That's who you always choose for the leader.
By the way, this is a real thing. I come to find out, like, this island is named like an actual name. It's not like in Top Gun Maverick where it's like we don't even know who the enemy is. Like, this is
fifth generation fighters.
This is real, like a real island that is really known for being run by militias. And it's the name they use. So I thought that was interesting when I found that
interesting
out.
Interesting choice.
You are going to be surprised when you realize how far I got into this movie before I realized it wasn't based on a true story.
Oh, fun.
That's interesting. Fun. That's funny.
It was a lot further in the movie
than it should have been.
Because everything is,
you were
like,
man, Sully, he's yeah, lot, a
I
lot.
Swear to God, I was calling him Scottish Sully the entire movie.
Sully.
Uh-huh.
It can't even be Die Hard on a plane because Die Hard 2 was literally Die Hard on
a
plane.
It was. Yeah. Uh-huh.
No, yeah, this is better than Die Hard 2. In the campy cheesiness realm, it's not Die Hard, but it's not Snakes on a Plane. It's somewhere in between, you know.
And I think it's way, way closer to Die Hard for me because it didn't lean on like the one liners or a conceit. The conceit is the plane. And I was on board and ready to depart for the whole.
I'm going
to
give you for my one last thing, and then we'll move on because we are going long today, peoples. Long show today, but I did want to mention that there is, let's just say, a phone repair section of this movie, and I think this symbolizes what the movie does so right. In that there is the typical, almost tropey idea of getting a hold of the wrong person and it's just not working. But then what the movie does right is we fairly quickly know that it actually worked. Because there are systems in place, you know, that allow for, you know, them to connect the dots. They connected the dots and the movie doesn't make a big deal about it. It's just the way it would be, you know. And I think the movie does that on several occasions where it just feels like, oh, yeah, it's, you know.
I love that because when it's done wrong, it's almost like, oh, this will build some tension. They're going to like, do you think I haven't seen this movie before? You're confused. I have seen this movie before.
Right. Yeah. All right. Before we head into the best ever challenge, just a reminder that you can support through Patreon if you want to be a SiftPop member. Go to patreon.com/SiftPop, and we appreciate that. Like to give some extra content to our members, usually in the form, I should say, of a extra podcast. So we chatted about the DC announcement and the things that James Gunn talked about in that slate and kind of our thoughts on that for this week. If you want to get access to that and all the other bonus content, you can check out what the different levels receive at patreon.com/siftpop. And thank you for doing it. Keeps us going.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
All right, on to our best ever challenge, best ever Gerard Butler movies. We'll go number 5 to number 1. And of course, if you have it higher, you can
drop.
You can make sure and do that. So, number 5, I'll kick us off. I have Cop Shop at
Aaron,
number 5.
If you wouldn't mind hitting that button, please.
Drop.
Yes.
Good. I'm glad. I'm glad we all three have it on our list. Andrew, what's your number 5?
I'm going to go with Law Abiding Citizen.
Trump.
Oh, wow. Ian's just like, nope. Only I am going to talk today.
Just this guy.
Ian, tell us your number 5 so one of us can trump it.
Olympus Has Fallen.
No, you can have it.
No, you can go ahead and talk.
Oh, really? Really? Wow. I have learned that I have not seen enough Gerard Butler films. I've seen a fair amount, but probably I may well be missing the best ones. But yeah, I like this movie. It's in the plain vein of very simple, no surprises, fun action movie. Gerard Butler being actiony.
And I agree. By the way, I like Olympus Has Fallen. It's my favorite Has Fallen movie for sure.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, it's my favorite White House Down movie as well.
Yep.
Same year, people. Same year.
Same year.
Never going to get over that.
I don't know which one has Channing Tatum in it, but...
Channing Tatum is the White House Down one.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. All right. On to our number 4s. Number 4 is where I have Greenland.
Okay. Nice. You can have that, eat it, sit on it, puke it up, put it in a cabin.
Oh, wait, you don't like Greenland?
I do not like this film.
Ooh.
I like the idea. I do not like the execution.
I think the execution is really the good, best part of the movie. It felt so real, and like that's how it would really go down if nothing fell out of place.
Yeah, I also really like the the structure of the movie. Has a very clear objective, and the entire movie is about obstacles to that objective, how those obstacles are overcome. I really, really dug it. And it was the first disaster movie in a long time where the disaster felt more like an actual piece of the story and the plot as opposed to just a spectacle, you know, just a big set piece. So I think the best disaster movies do that. I think Twister does that. I think the disaster part of Twister is about the objectives and the plot and those kind of the story and those kind of things. Whereas some other recent disaster movies, Day After Tomorrow, those kind of things, mm-hmm. I don't believe have done that as well. So I do like Greenland. Andrew, what is your number four?
This is where I have Reign of Fire. Trap! All right. I saw you reaching for it.
This is where we get so lost and confused now. I didn't realize it was my turn already.
Ian, what is your number four?
Number four is Cop Shop. This is where I have that.
Aaron, if you wouldn't mind.
Trap!
Thank you.
Okay.
Have we only talked about one movie so far?
No. We talked about Olympus Has Fallen in Green.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, okay.
Yes, we have. My number three, appropriately, is 300.
Aaron. My gosh. We've
Andrew, tried more.
It doesn't seem mathematically possible that we've
tried. No, it really doesn't, does it?
Andrew, what is your number three?
This is where I have Cop Shop.
All right. Andrew has it at number three. Ian has it at number four.
About Cop Shop.
I have it at number five. Andrew, talk a little bit about Cop Shop.
I did not know what kind of a movie I was going to get into with this. I thought this was going to be, you know, at first look, it seemed like a cheap, you know, made-for-TV movie, speaking of. Mm-hmm. But this movie is, like, incredible. Toby Huss, my favorite part about the entire movie, he's absolutely great. Performances, though, Alexis Lauder, I got my eye on you after this movie. You so are good. And then, of course, you know, Frank Grillo, Gerard Butler. It's just a wild one-location movie. It felt kind of like after when the movie was done, I knew the full layout of that police station. And I love when
it's great at orienting you.
Yes. Yeah. And I love whenever a movie can make you feel like you are aware of where everybody could be. It makes it feel more immersive in that way.
Yeah.
Great movie.
Ian, what do you have, Dad?
Oh man, I knew exactly what I was getting into because you and Jeremy both said like how much you gushed about this movie.
It's just so fun. It's just so fun.
Expected nothing from it, and it does enough new while still being what you expect to be a really fun ride. Like, I need to watch this movie again. Actually,
how does this movie have so fun? It only has a 6.2 on IMDb. That's insane.
I think that's probably right. I wouldn't put a lot of stock in IMDb.
I trust IMDb more than like Rotten Tomatoes or any of those.
More than Rotten Tomatoes, maybe, but I would look at Metacritic as one of my favorite indicators of actual quality. But yeah,
you're not wrong about Alexis Lauder. So good.
So good. I don't have a lot to add. I just think this is one of those movies that knows exactly what it is and delivers exactly what it wants to deliver, and it's mm-hmm. what it's delivering is something that I had a good time with. So yeah, there you go. All right, on to our number twos, I believe. My number two is Reign of Fire. I had it at number two. Andrew, you had it at number four. So let me just preach the gospel of Reign of Fire again.
Yeah.
If you thought Game of Thrones was the first place dragons were handled really well, may I introduce you to Reign of Fire, about a world that has been overtaken by dragons, and Christian Bale and Gerard Butler are going to fight them. So
I don't even think I've heard of this movie.
You've never heard of Reign of Fire?
You, Reign
Dude,
of Fire.
Matthew McConaughey built like a tank. And looking mm-hmm. like the Liver King.
Wow. Yeah.
And it's got Alexander Siddig in it as well.
Yeah.
Did he get murdered by a dragon? I bet
probably.
It
probably. Ian, I'll tell you this. This is probably one of my favorite post-apocalyptic movies. Like,
how did this miss me?
I was 12.
It was probably when you were a kid, honestly. Yeah. It's been a while. Yeah.
Yeah. No, this is a really good movie. The effects, like the design of the dragons, is great. The concept of this movie is so fresh. Like, dragons were real creatures and they were just in hibernation. The amount of scientific knowledge that they tried to embed in this movie to make it feel more real is great. Like how they breathe fire, like the chemicals and like glands. Yeah, the world and building stuff like
is
that.
Really cool.
So yeah. good. It's I'm so good.
Adding that to my list. I will have to watch that this weekend. That leaks right up my alley.
Ian, please let me know what you thought of it because I'm going to probably watch it tonight after having this conversation. Nice. It's been a long time since I've seen it, but it is oh so good.
Awesome. Andrew, what's your number two?
This is where I have Den of Thieves.
Yeah.
Yay!
I had that in my honorable mentions. So, yeah.
Heat is one of my favorite movies, and this is just modern Heat. It's literally the exact same movie. Like, you can't...
Well,
like,
not literally, but I understand what you're saying.
Okay, it's a knockoff. It's a total knockoff of Heat, but it's really good. I think that Gerard Butler's great, and... Pablo Schreiber. I almost said Paul Schreiber. He's great in it. This is where I really kept an eye on Pablo Schreiber because I'm like, okay, you got some acting chops on you. I'm gonna keep an eye on you too. So, yeah, I think that Den of Thieves is a very fun, tense, great heist movie.
Yep.
Yeah,
I agree.
I agree. And it disappeared, and no one talks about it.
Nobody talks about this movie.
But they're making another one, so it'll be back.
Are they really?
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah.
I had really, really good time. It's probably one of my favorite heist movies of the last 10 years.
Did it make
your
list?
I had a really great time with it. Yeah, it was my number three. I trumped it at some point, I think. No, I couldn't have trumped it.
No, you must have gotten
skipped
trumped.
My number three then. No, yeah, I would have. Anyway, it's my number three.
Okay.
Maybe I just forgot that we trumped it. That's fine. Okay, so yeah, Den of Thieves, definitely honorable mention for me as well. Ian, what is your number two?
300.
Oh, nice. Yep. Nope. You gotta hit the button.
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
All right. So on to our number ones. How to Train Your Dragon is, of course, going to be my number one. I adore this movie, and I think the voice cast, including Gerard Butler, is perfect for it. It was the movie where I was like, okay, fine, DreamWorks, you can make animated movies, I guess.
Prince of Egypt wasn't that for you?
What's that?
Prince of Egypt didn't do it for
you? I guess I mean CG animated movies. No, Prince of Egypt is one of the greatest movies of all time.
Yeah, it really is.
So, but How to Train Your Dragon is two for me, and I love the parallels between Hiccup and Toothless. I love the way they find each other. I love the emotion of the end, you know, when they both realize they need each other to complete each other. And like, it's a really well-structured and told movie. The movie is so good that it made me believe How to Train Your Dragon 2 and 3 were better than they actually were.
That's powerful.
But I remain convinced that this is a masterpiece of a movie, How to Train Your Dragon. So, just one of my favorites. That's my number one.
I never watched it.
Oh, interesting. You should check it out. It's really, really good.
It is actually really good. The first one especially is really, really good. And Gerard Butler is great. The father-son dynamic that this, you know, movie is really predicated and based around is very well done.
You're not going to believe this, but it's a movie about how a son has to live up to a father. I've never seen this in a movie before.
What?
Like, it's wild. Fathers and sons, who'd have thought it?
Does he think he can do things, but he just can't?
That's a little different.
Wait, you said you haven't seen this movie. What are you talking about?
Also, I do want to just hop back a few seconds and say, actually, 2 and 3 are good movies. They just weren't perfect movies like I thought they were when they first came out.
Who knows?
Who knows?
Yeah, me
Is
number
your number
one.
Two?
Your number one, Andrew?
300.
All right. I had number three. Wow. Andrew had it at number one.
Yeah.
What did you think about? I mean, tell us a little bit about your thoughts on it.
I saw this movie like six or seven times whenever it came out in theaters. It was like 2003 or four, somewhere around there. But it's visually one of the most striking and beautiful movies ever made. The way that they're able to capture and portray graphic novel artistry and put it on screen. You could say a lot about, you know, I almost said Frank Miller, but Zack Snyder.
Zack Snyder.
Yeah, you can say a lot about Zack Snyder movies and whether you like him or not, but the man is a visual master. That guy knows how to make a beautiful movie. And a lot of people are like, yeah, when are they ever going to make the real story of the 300 Spartans against the Persian army and stuff like that? And I'm like, I really couldn't care if they ever make the authentic, genuine version, because this is the version I think that's actually the more prevalent, because it's I forget the name of the guy, Boromir's brother in Lord of the Rings, Faramir. There we go. Yeah, Faramir is the one telling this story to the rest of the Spartan army and stuff, and that's why everything is so hyper-visualized. It's because it's a beautiful, grandiose story being told. So, yeah, it's a great movie. Great, great movie.
Zack Snyder, rightfully or not, gets tagged for, you know, the slow-mo and the speed slow-mo, whatever. But I think it's important to remember that although he wasn't the first to do it, he kind of claimed it as his visual style, which is not easy to do, and really kind of created a type of cinema with the 300 and or 300. Yeah. And I remember watching it. I have several memories of this movie. One of them was coming out and somebody just being really homophobic, like about the movie, talking about, you know, how it was only meant for gay people to watch or whatever. And, and I was just like, somebody may be struggling a little internal. Like somebody's wrestling through some inner demons.
Hope they're better now.
Inner processing, I should say. But and then I also remember coming out of it and another couple coming out of it just being like, what was that? I like they were like they couldn't figure out what they had just seen. And it's kind of one of those movies where you watch it for the first time and you go, I don't think I've ever seen anything like this. And and that's saying something. And it's, you know, we talk about hyper-stylized violence. I've even talked to this podcast about how that impacts me and the cognitive dissonance I have with it. And I have some of that here as well. But what's interesting is when you make it so fantasy element like this, where it feels less realistic, for some reason I'm able to find my way in a little bit easier, because it feels like a painting. I was just going to say it feels like a painting. There's an element of artistry to it that feels different. So, yeah, I really like the 300. Where are we? I got lost.
That was my number two as well. So I think it's my number one. Okay, that's what I'll
say. So, yeah. Ian, we're ready for your number one.
Law-abiding citizen is the only correct answer.
Okay, well, there you go. Didn't even have it on my list.
Yeah. Oh, I'm fine. You're wrong. I love this movie so much. It's the perfect level of bonkers. I think it's my favorite Gerard Butler movie until I watch. Wait, that was a dumb thing to say. It's at number one. My favorite Gerard Butler performance, as well as my favorite Gerard Butler.
There you go.
Until I see Reign of Fire. I have a feeling that's going to notch it up. It's insane. It's one of the few movies where my suspension of disbelief is suspended so far, it then returns to being okay again. Like, it's just, it is ridiculous. What this man pulls off, it's obscene. I love every minute of it. It is ridiculous. I have so much fun. It gives me the giggles with this movie. It's not the spectacle that 300 is. It doesn't break any like cinematic boundaries. It's just a really, really good time for me.
But like 300, I think that this movie revels in the violence in a way that transcends, for me at least it did, it transcended, kind of like 300 did, the gore and violence being disgusting as to not visually beautiful, but what the movie's trying to say as a commentary on the justice system. It is almost artistically done intentionally. Instead of just like, oh, that's gross and cool. No, I think that it's supposed to be a self-reflection. I'm with Ian. I think this is a criminally underviewed and underrated movie.
I think it's written off as ridiculous, almost Fast and Furious levels of unbelievable. But the message behind it is actually way deeper than you'd think. I just love that opening scene where it's like, no, you shouldn't let me off. And he's arguing with the judge that has, like, let him go.
Yeah.
I was like, this isn't right.
So oh, <good. laughs> whenever he starts slow clapping, yeah. you're like, oh, that's when you realize it's a different movie than what you expected it to be. You're like, wait, what is going on here? And then the movie gets insane.
It's like, I can't wait for the sequel. I cannot wait.
I could not tell you if I've seen this or not. If I have seen it, I don't remember seeing it. It probably means I haven't seen it. So,
Aaron, it's violent enough to where if you'd seen it, you would remember it.
That's what I would guess. So my guess is that I have not seen this.
Yeah.
Might be one to put on the list.
Yeah.
There you go. Best ever Gerard Butler movies. Okay, guys, let's finish it off with our buried treasure. What is that one thing in any area of pop culture that you want to make sure people know about? Ian, you're our guest, so you will go last. Andrew, kick us off.
Real quick, my honorable mention for Gerard Butler is Rock and Rolla. I love that movie.
Oh, fair enough. Yeah. Sorry. I thought we had all used all our Gerard Butler tokens. I didn't realize there was one more. Ian, did you have any more that you wanted to use?
I mean, I can rag on Greenland a bit longer if you want.
No. Andrew, what is your buried treasure?
Well, it's not really a buried treasure because it's the number one show in the world right now, and that's The Last of Us. It's, oh my goodness, this, they did it. They finally did a good.
They did it, guys. They did it.
Yeah, they did a really amazing video game adaptation to either film or TV. This show is crazy good. Like, the first two episodes were, I don't know if you guys, have you guys started watching it?
I've watched all three. I don't know if Ian has.
I've seen episode one.
Okay.
Yeah, I was going to wait to binge it all, but I'm now too compelled. I need to, I'm going to have to watch it.
Well, the first episode is masterfully done. It's straight out of the game almost. I love how at the beginning, you know, you get that, I guess you could say prologue, but it's not really. But that the whole day leading up to when the game actually starts is so beautifully done. But let me say this right real quick. The third episode of this show.
I've heard.
I mean, it might be one of the most beautiful / heartbreaking things I've ever seen. It's Nick Offerman and Murray, those two guys. I don't know how two guys can win for a best actor at the same time, you know, but both of these guys need to win for most actor at the same time. I cried more in that episode than I did in a long time. Oh, you're going to cry so much, Ian. Ian,
Cry's
I know.
Good, Ian.
Ian, I know
you. So rarely cry.
Ian, I know you, and you are going to cry so...
Nah,
no,
you won't cry.
Oh, he's going to cry.
I hope I do. I genuinely hope I do.
Honestly,
I don't know that I will.
Honestly, I'll say this, and this will be the last thing I say about the show, is the fact that that episode can... You know internally that it's a horrible thing that's happening in the world, that this you know, pandemic is, you know, taking out all of the world. But that episode makes you think, man, if the pandemic had to happen, then these two people wouldn't have ever met. And yeah, that too is a shame. That too would have been a shame for them to never meet each other. It's a completely... I didn't know that they could make it this good. I'm so excited.
Episode 3 turned me around on the show. We'll see if it continues. I have such Walking Dead fatigue that it is a little bit difficult for me. Episode 2, I genuinely did not like. I did not like episode 2. I felt like I'd seen... There was one part of episode 2 I enjoyed, and it was anytime the show does stuff around the breakout, I get more interested. And episode 3 for me was everything I wish The Walking Dead had been, which was this real ability to not only explore deeper characters or side characters in interesting ways, but also explore the world in a way that tells me more about what's happening. There's some subtle world building stuff in this. I guess it would kind of be spoiler, so I'll stay away from it a little bit. But the way this outbreak is explained and what happened, and then some choices that are made in the first episode that you look back on and go, oh, that's interesting. There's almost a wink there. The movie is really interestingly layered and put together.
You called it a movie because it is so cinematic.
It is. Well, and every episode's like movie
hour and a half. It's an hour and a half. Yeah, each episode is an hour and a half long. So
yeah, I am excited to watch the new movie this weekend and see what movie four will be. Nice. So it'll be interesting to see.
Yes, I'm enjoying it. Yeah, no. Definitely. If you haven't started watching it, no pun intended, definitely pull the trigger on it.
Yeah, yeah. My buried treasure is one of the best TV shows I've seen in a while. Poker Face is my buried treasure on Peacock. And this is Natasha Lyonne. Rian Johnson produced it, wrote the first episode. And this is very much a Columbo-style mystery show. And what I mean by that is, and boy, is this refreshing, every episode starts with a murder. There is no mystery about who committed the murder. There is no mystery about who is being murdered. There is no mystery about how they murdered them.
I love that.
It starts by telling you everything that happens and then shows you how Natasha Lyonne figured it out. And it is such a relief to watch, well, two things. Number one, a show that is very much a mystery of the week. You know, and there is a little bit of an overarching plot during the first and a little bit of the second episode. But if for the most part, it's just mystery of the week. And then it is also just refreshing to not have it have to be a mystery box where the audience is like, oh, I didn't see that coming. Oh, what a surprise. Oh, that's the killer. Like, just the relief of, you know, what the main character doesn't, and to watch how she figures it out. And also, Natasha Lyonne is just so good.
Oh, she's amazing.
In this show.
She's incredible.
So,
apparently, there was a second season of Russian Doll that I haven't checked out yet.
There was. It's good. It's good.
I love the first season.
So, Poker Face, huge recommend. Check it out on Peacock. It is reason alone to get Peacock if you don't have it.
Nice.
Ian, what is your buried treasure?
I feel like we're all cheating because mine's one of the biggest shows on Amazon Prime, and you probably will have heard of it. But it is The Legend of Vox Machina.
Yes.
From the Critical Role guys. But I still feel like, as huge as Critical Role is, this is still a show that is perhaps being slept on. Maybe people are put off because they don't know the lore, they don't know Dungeons and Dragons. You do not need any of it. Yes, you're gonna appreciate it more.
Yeah.
But this season one, and I haven't started season two yet. Season one is one of the best single arc seasons of not just animated TV, of any TV at all. It's got heart, it's funny, it's hilarious. It's a great adventure. It has to introduce eight people and an entire world that they live in and an adventure all at once. And it is done so efficiently, so, so well. Just bloody watch it. It's so, so good.
Ian?
It's so much fun.
Let me tell you this. Without spoiling anything, I think that watching season two of Vox Machina would pair very well with watching Reign of Fire.
Well, now I've paused because I've almost finished with campaign one. So I know, sorry, the podcast version of the actual show.
Critical Role.
So yeah, exactly. So I know, I'm so excited because I know where they're going. I know what they're going to do. I'm so excited to watch season two. But yeah, just go and watch it. It's great. It's a great animated show. It's so, what, 10 episodes? It's 10, 20-minute episodes. It's so good.
Dicer, have you watched them?
No, I'm not going to watch until I have consumed all 800,000 minutes of podcasting.
I mean, I'm at minute 7,000. I'm nearly done. So I may as well just wait. But
I watched a little bit of the first episode, and guys, I don't think I'm a fantasy person. I felt very disconnected from the show, and I think part of that may have been the feeling of that can happen where it's like, I know other people are loving this because of their deeper connection to it, and I just have no connection to it. Like, I have no, you know, deeper connection to it. So
I haven't listened to Critical Role, and I love the show.
Right. No, no, no. I totally, I'm saying my own psychological processing may have been impacted by that. I don't know. I just know that.
You just don't like fun.
I just hate fun, really, yeah. at the end of the day. And when something's really good, Shyamalan,
you're just not interested.
Yeah. When something's really good, I just like, it doesn't work for me.
Yeah.
So I have a feeling I would love it. It's also that thing where I have just tried really hard not to add new shows that don't just like hit it out of the park for me, just because I have so many that hit it out of the park for me that I want to catch up on. And I'm actually putting a dent in them this winter after I got through award season. I've been putting a dent in my TV watching. So it'll be maybe something that I can lock on there later. But yes, I don't know when I will watch The Legend of Ex Machina.
I'm just going to start piping it into your room when I come to stay.
That was an intentional misnaming. Yes, I know. It's Vox Machina. That is on Prime. Legend of Ex Machina. Poker Face is on Peacock. And The Last of Us is on what will soon be called Max, I believe. Or HBO Max, as you're doing right now. So
there real you quick go. In the chat, Uishi Taksumikotehedu, do are fantastike.
Oh, good. Yes.
Nice.
Same. Yes. Exact. Whatever Andrew said, same. Yeah. Absolutely the same. We did it, guys. We managed to do a podcast.
Woo!
Congratulations to all. Well done indeed. Thank you so much for joining us today for Sif Pop. It is part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network. You can find out more about other shows on the network at studiodna.media or by searching Studio DNA in your podcast player. Huge thanks to Andrew for hanging out today.
Thank you, buddy. Talk to me.
Big thanks to producer Phil for producing the audio and video show.
Woo! Did I lose you guys?
Maybe.
No, that was a great pull.
That was amazing.
Okay. That was just a big old middle finger to Phil.
You're not doing anything for Phil anymore. Okay,
No, I hear you now. For some reason, my computer just went, huge thanks to... And I'm like, oh, yes. I was like, oh, we lost Aaron. And I was like, but then you're like, oh, I guess we're not doing it. I'm like, oh, maybe it's me. So if you want to lead me back into that, I'm sorry, guys.
You know what? Also a really big thanks to producer Phil for producing the audio and video show.
Thanks, Phil.
Much love and gratitude to our SipPop members for supporting us as well. If you want to take a look at that, that's at Patreon, patreon.com/SipPop. Thank you to Ian Whittington for joining us today. Ian, where would you like to direct people's mouses? I don't know. Browsers.
To the internet. Just go on the internet. Yeah, Twitter, you can have a chat with me. I'm at Whitsen, WHITDSINNED. And I have a podcast called Captain's Pod, where in 2 weeks we are going to be live reviewing the third season of Picard, which is getting all of the good reviews finally and getting all of the love. And it seems like it's going to be a great swan song for the TNG crew. So yeah, if you like Star Trek, come have a listen to Captain's Pod.
I make the occasional appearance on Captain's Pod, especially during Strange New Worlds. If you want to check it out, go do so. It's a lot of fun. There are a lot of ways to connect with the podcast. You can leave a comment, a rating, or a review, whether you listen at Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever. Also, email. We still have that. That is feedback@sifpop.com. And finally, if you're having a good time, your movie-loving friends will probably like the show, too. So make sure you let them know about it and that listening is much easier than turning the entire apocalypse into a knock-knock joke. We will be back next week with Magic Mike, a new Magic Mike movie, as well as some other stuff. So we'll see you then.
Bye.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.